Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. This episode is a previous recording of our live Ask a Professional Scrum Trainer series, where a live audience asks questions of professional Scrum trainers. We hope you enjoy this episode. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're located today. Welcome to today's Ask a Professional Scrum Trainer podcast. I will be your moderator today, Lindsay Velasina with Scrum.org. And today I have with us one of our professional Scrum trainers, Farzeen Anis. She is based in Australia. So welcome, Farzeen. We're so happy to have you today. And thank you, audience, for coming. So just very quickly, for who is Scrum.org, in case you aren't familiar, we are the home of Scrum. We were founded by Ken Schwaber back in 2009, and our mission is to help people and teams solve complex problems. We offer training, certification, and ongoing learning for professional Scrum. And you'll notice on our website, there are a lot of free resources on there to help you with that ongoing learning, things like this webinar, videos, whatnot. So please check those out. And we hope that today's session plays a part in that learning journey. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Fez to introduce herself.
Thanks, Lindsay. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Ask a Scrum Trainer. I am a professional Scrum Trainer. I'm based in Melbourne, Australia. I'm very excited to do one of these. I haven't done one of these webinars before. A little bit about myself. I always like to start with outside of work. I love coffee, being a Melbournian, all things good food and wine as well. I like reading lots of books. Crime fiction is my jam. I picked up powerlifting as a hobby this year, so that's probably a new thing that I picked up that I do outside of work. Inside of work, I've been doing practicing professional Scrum for 10 plus years now. The first time I went to a professional Scrum training, I knew that's what I wanted to do with my life, and I became a professional Scrum trainer a number of years ago. It's been incredible to use my exposure to so many learners across the world to actually help myself be a better Scrum Master and an Agile coach to teams and organizations in various industries. And I'm really looking forward to sharing my experience with you and hopefully help answer some questions that you have.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Fez. So this first question for you here. So where does a project manager fit in Scrum?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's a common one. There's one of two ways I like to think about it. Project managers, generally speaking, historically have a wide range of responsibilities that they undertake to enable Scrum teams and Scrum team members or project team members. Number one is that project management is like a suite of responsibilities, and either those project management responsibilities get distributed among the members of the team. So for example, classically, if a project manager does budgeting, someone like a product owner on a Scrum team might take over that responsibility because they are close to the product and they're making decisions about the product. So it helps to have the budget close to that decision-making ability. Similar to something like figuring out team composition. Now, while a project manager may be someone who has experience, assisting with recruitment and things like that, generally speaking, Scrum looks at something like a Scrum team is able to tell what skills and capabilities are required in a certain team and are able to advise accordingly. So option number one, project management responsibilities are distributed within the various roles or accountabilities in a Scrum team. Option number two is that's still a suite of responsibilities that an organization needs someone to undertake. So it still works for a project manager to maintain those responsibilities. And so the project manager in that circumstance is actually looking at how they can enable the Scrum team. So what are the, I guess, supporting processes within the wider organization that are impeding a Scrum team's effectiveness? Enablement, what services, what support they need, and hopefully help get them that information and that support. So that's sort of the two ways I see project management and project managers fit in.
Makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that. So we have a question here from Lily. So how did you become a professional Scrum trainer?
It's a very good question. So I became a professional Scrum trainer 7 years ago, I attended my first professional Scrum training. And at that point in time, I'd been practicing Scrum for like 3 to 4 years. What was interesting is that what I experienced in my first PSM course was that as much as I loved Scrum already, what was described in the training room blew my mind. It seemed like the potential for Scrum and practicing Scrum had not been reached in my experience of Scrum thus far. So I was lucky that the Scrum trainer for that course was actually one of my colleagues in the consultancy I worked at the time. And I went up to him and I said, whatever you just did, I want to do that with my life. How do I begin? So for about 2 years after that, I used him and I worked with a number of other mentors, existing professional Scrum trainers. I basically met and collected mentors to help me on my journey to become a Scrum trainer. They helped me a lot to understand how incredible and vibrant this community is. One of the most wonderful things about becoming a professional Scrum trainer was the time it took and the journey. So over that year or 2 years, I went and got a lot more experience as a Scrum master. In trying to do the assessments, I really got to understand the theory and history and practice of Scrum. In getting feedback every step of the process from Scrum.org, who are incredibly supportive and they never say no. They always only have feedback, which is incredible. So that feedback really helped me grow. And then 2 years later, I was a professional Scrum trainer going through all the processes. I couldn't recommend becoming part of the community enough, not necessarily to run your own training business or do the training, just from your own learning and development perspective. It's hands down the best thing I've done for my career.
That is awesome. And we are so happy to have you as well. So thank you for that. So this question here, so in Scrum, how do you handle user training needs as the system develops? Have you ever run into that with anybody, Prazeen?
Yes. So, I mean, I think this is where there's the ideal scenario and what gets practiced or experienced. I have had worked with teams who deal with users training as part of their sprint. So they have users training built into their definition of done. And for me, that's the ideal. That's the utopia. And that's generally fine if user training is a component of releasability for whatever you're working on, or usability for whatever you're working on, then that means until that training is done or completed, that item of work isn't really done. It's not really releasable. So it needs to be built in the definition of done and therefore be done as part of the sprints. There are definitely many contexts where that's not possible. And this is where I'm like, not possible, perhaps more to systemic constraints, or let's say regulatory constraints or customer constraints, rather than sort of self-imposed constraints, which can happen in those scenarios. I think ensuring that you actually pause sprints to complete the work that you need to do to help people learn and adopt the product is or the feature or whatever it is that you're building, or the service is done is sort of ideal. So the idea is not to sort of like keep building things while you're trying to train people as well. Making a strategic pause to get people to adopt your product, I think, is the other way I would look at it.
Okay, great. Thank you. This next question here. So in Scrum, the product owner will create user stories. And then what is the role? I'm having trouble reading this question. Then what is the role to a agile BA to add value? So where does the BA role fit in Scrum? Does the BA role just become a coordinator in Scrum? That was part of that question.
That's so interesting. I would almost look at it the other way around. So I want to get some terminology right, because I'm actually, as much as I'm a word nerd, I think terminology helps here to think about how Scrum would be structured. So first of all, let's look at the concept of an agile business analyst. An agile business analyst or a business analyst is a skill set. So I used to be a business analyst. My first job was a business analyst, right? And if I think about how I fit into a Scrum team, it is the accountability of a developer. So the terminology here is, it's important not to assume that a developer in Scrum is a software developer or a software engineer. A developer is anyone who has the skills to develop the product or the service or whatever it is that we're working on. So for example, if I'm in a technology team, developers are the people like business analysts, designers, QA folks, software engineers, et cetera, et cetera. But I could be a marketing team, Scrum team, and if my developers would be people like who do blogging or vlogging and social media and campaigns and even sales, et cetera. So the skills are what's required. So to one part of the question that I wanted to qualify is that the role or the value of a business analyst in a Scrum team that is developing, let's say, a software or a product or a service, is to provide that development effort. That's absolutely right. The question also mentions something along the lines of product owners write user stories. That is actually not necessarily the case. Product owners are accountable for ordering the backlog, maximizing value by ordering the backlog. But in order to achieve that accountability, achieve their goal, a product owner is fully able to delegate any and all responsibilities, such as figuring out the design, figuring out the requirements, figuring out what customers are saying, figuring out what the data is saying, figuring out what the solution is saying needs to be, figuring out what the quality standards need to be. A product owner is certainly not someone who can do all of these themselves. Therefore, it is not on the product owner to create product backlog items. A product owner can completely ask for that support from members of the Scrum team or other team members to get that information. And so a business analyst would fit absolutely nicely right in as that developer who is assisting product owners with getting that detail for a product backlog.
Right. That is awesome. And I think that answers one of the follow-up questions that came in as well. So this next question here, so I'm actually going to, for those that were here on the live version of this today, I'm actually going to drop this into the chat because it's rather lengthy, so I don't want anybody to miss any of the questions. So this is a two-part question. So I'm working for an analytics organization where we are focused on Gen AI projects, which are short stint, 2 to 3 week projects. They're practicing Scrum with Kanban and handling the discussions and expediting issues through Scrum, but managing the tasks through Kanban boards for easy tracking. What's the best model that they should follow for these? So this is a really big question, but for short stint types of projects, what do you recommend for zines?
So someone
wants might need some more context. So I'll let you ask for the context that you need.
Yeah, and I'll make a go at what I think can happen. And if I haven't addressed what you're looking for, please provide a follow-up question to whoever has posted this. So one of the things someone once told me that was really, really helpful is you can think about a sprint in Scrum as a project, right? Because what are projects? They're usually time-bound, scope-bound, budget-bound, right? And in Scrum, a sprint is a time box within which you try to achieve a goal, which is, I guess, a flexible scope of work. And you can generally assess the cost of that Scrum team running, right? So Scrum is a mini project in my goal, right? So I think from this person that they're saying they're already doing Scrum ban and like, you know, I would sort of go into looking like if they're 2 to 3 week long stints, you can just think of them as mini projects or that whole sprint, that whole whole 3 week project is its own Scrum sprint, and maybe use a product backlog to manage what kind of stints or sprints of projects you take on over the course of your AI analytics journey. You could, another thing you might consider is if you are able to, you might want to think about what your sprint length is and sort of maximize the sprint length to figure out to ensure the longest projects are taken on. Sometimes maybe one or two projects might take multiple sprints to get done, which is absolutely okay. That's like a normal project. I think the fact that you're using Scrumban, air quotes, or Kanban with Scrum is natural for any environment where you have a lot of variable sort of work, so a lot of kind of request driven work, and I think using something like a visual board is not a Scrum thing, it's a Kanban thing, so it sounds like you're doing those things. I really think that one of the things maybe that you might want to read up and learn is actually how Kanban principles can help Scrum teams. So if you're doing a bit of both, then I would say look up, for example, the Professional Scrum with Kanban guide from scrum.org that really talks about things like how to manage WIP better, how to improve your flow, how to look at things like your cycle time or work item age so that you don't let your service level expectations drop and things like that. Really powerful stuff. I really feel like Kanban practices improve your Scrum implementation. And so I think that is something you might want to do. Besides that, I would say also, and I mean, I'm not in a training room right now, so I think I'm allowed to say this. You don't have to get too attached to doing Scrum by the book. Like if a product goal or a sprint goal isn't making sense for you, then maybe think about something like trying to improve certain measures of success for your team or for your customer or for your business or for your client, essentially. But don't get attached to doing Scrum by the letter. If it doesn't make sense for your environment, it's okay to, in my book, sometimes cherry pick. But yeah, so look into something like a Professional Scrum with Kanban or just Kanban and lean practices to improve flow is sort of my thoughts there.
Awesome. Thank you. So this question here, so what is the best scenario I should strive for if I've been hired by a company new to Scrum? My management had assigned me to be the Scrum Master of 6 new Scrum teams, and these teams build one product.
Yeah. Ooh. Nina, just because I can see the name in there, Nina, I'll tell you why I just went the who. That's because I have been a Scrum Master and a Scrum practitioner long enough to understand that a lot of organizations tend to devalue the role of a Scrum Master. Now, it's the fact that they've hired you as a Scrum Master is a great start. The thing that I would consider you to be watching out for is how many teams you're trying to be a Scrum Master for. In my experience, if I'm trying to be the Scrum Master for more than 2 or 3 teams, I'm at best doing some administrative work. Right. So I would see if there's an opportunity for you to stagger your time with these teams. So, for example, you spend time with 1, maybe 2 teams, building up their Scrum maturity before moving on to others. But hey, maybe that's not possible. I have a 3-step process to figuring out how to start with Scrum. Right. If you're starting up with Scrum, 1, get trained in Scrum. And this is not a sales pitch. Right. I just want to be really clear. It's not a sales pitch. It's to language and is important because there are more myths and misunderstandings about Scrum in the industry than not. So, and it's often the Scrum Master gets training in Scrum or is educated in Scrum, but you don't get give the Scrum team or the Scrum team members the opportunity to get trained. Now, you can train them since you're a Scrum Master with that experience, or you can go get them training. This is obviously context specific, but 1, get people trained, get everyone speaking the same language so people understand what a planning is, what a review is, what a retro is, what a daily Scrum is, and what are the roles, etc. Right? So that's 1. Step 2, learn your sprint goal should be to learn how to Scrum. So spend a sprint simulating Scrum, like do a planning, do some refinement, do daily Scrums, do reviews, do retros, like run at least one sprint where your whole purpose is not to build stuff, but to learn how to Scrum, right? And then, of course, you take time to, you're doing your sprint, you're doing your building your product thing. So then comes my step 3, regularly run retrospectives where your focus is on reflecting on how Scrum is working for you, whether Scrum is working for you, how are the Scrum Masters, developers, product owners performing and not performing, like how do they feel? Do they need to change how they're working? The aspects of Scrum, of the Scrum process, you know, retrospect on Scrum itself and try to improve it. So for me, that's kind of my 3-step process to new to Scrum teams, new to Scrum organizations, and if I'm supposed to teach them how to Scrum. Training, do a sprint 0 where you learn how to Scrum, retrospect on your implementation of Scrum.
Okay, great, thank you. So this next question here, so we talked about joining a company that's new to Scrum, but what advice do you have for a new Scrum Master and any books that you would recommend?
New Scrum Master, what advice do I have? Oof. You know what's interesting? I'm glad that the question is there because We say the Scrum Master serves the Scrum team, and we often forget that like your Scrum Master is part of the Scrum team. And in order to enable teams, you have to enable yourself, right? So it's a bit of a put your own mask on first business, right? So the way I would think about your personal development is I break it down into the three services of a Scrum Master, right? A Scrum Master serves the team, a Scrum Master serves the product owner, a Scrum Master serves the organization, right? And the Scrum Master serves the team is probably where everyone starts. And I include myself in this. I was a business analyst and I had worked heavily within teams. So when I moved into Scrum Master roles, I was to work very closely with the developers of a Scrum team. And in particular, I had a bias towards working with business analysts. So I would be mindful of your own skills bias that you might bring to the team. But yeah, serving the Scrum team should really be about what are my training or facilitation skills? What are my conflict resolution skills? What are my what is my ability to get people focused? What are my interpersonal and relationship skills? Like, because a lot of the things that a Scrum Master is doing for the Scrum team is really building a high performing team. So spending time getting with the team, getting to know them personally, and I include both developers and product owners in this, right? Then I look at, let's say, the service to the product owner. And this is where, despite the fact that I had a background in a business analyst, for a long time, I didn't improve my product management or product ownership skills because I didn't think I needed. But then I realized as a Scrum Master, in order to enable a product owner, I have to have those skills. So I had to actually spend some time learning about product management, learning about product ownership, potentially take on those roles if possible, so that I had the skills to enable a product owner, right? So that was the second part. And then the third part is services to the organization. And this is, this is the really icky, scary stuff. Most people like me, especially conflict avoiders like myself, are worried about. But ultimately, in order to create the conditions for success for your team, you have to know what it means to be a change agent. You need to know what it means to have conversations with executives, with stakeholders, with leadership to help not necessarily sell Scrum, but explain to them the benefit of what it is you're doing, why it is what you're doing. So basically the journey for a Scrum Master is really figuring out what skills there's a gap in there for you and working on those, right? The books that come to mind for serving the Scrum team is Gunther Verheuen's Scrum, A Pocket Guide. Incredible book. And the gentleman is also a Scrum Master and Professor Scrum Trainer. Incredibly, and that's just sort of your go-to for anything. How do I do this in Scrum? For learning about product management, I'm going to have to Google this, but maybe Lindsay, you can help me out with this. Which is the product owner book that's the basis of the PSPO course? Do you know off the top of your head? Sorry.
The Professional Scrum Product Owner book?
That's it, of course. That's exactly it. Yeah, A Professional Scrum Product Owner is the book. You want to read about that and then figure out where product management skills what product management skills you might want to be missing and you might want to pursue. I don't have any books per se off the top of my head for organizational skills. However, I would work on my leadership skills, and the book that, or the concept that worked really well for me to sort of channel my inner leader was the concept of host leadership. So that's another one I would consider reading up on as well, if that style of leadership rings true for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We have another BA related question. So do you think an agile BA should look for upskilling as a product owner or Scrum Master for better career prospects?
Ooh, this is, you folks are like figuring out my history here, because yes, business analyst. For as long as I was a business analyst, and I'll say it myself, Lindsay, I think I was a pretty good business analyst, right?
Sure you were the best.
But like there was this fork in my career where I had to be, when I sort of wanted to become a consultant, it was like, okay, what kind of consultant roles do you want to put on? Like that Scrum Master, Agile Coach role, or Product Owner, BA kind of role. And I had the skills potentially to pursue product ownership, but I no longer wanted to do that job. And to be honest, I am to this day very, very inspired and intimidated by product owners because I don't know how you do your job. That is a hectic job, to say the least. And I suffer from enough analysis paralysis, which probably made me a good BA, but probably wasn't great for my mental health. And I needed to develop a lot of my interpersonal skills actually for that Scrum Master role. And I took on, I prefer to take on that challenge. And I felt like that's where my passion would be in the, and also because that Scrum Master role is again, a little bit in that learning and development space. And I knew personally that that's the kind of style I wanted to pursue. And hey, I'm a trainer. So guess what? That made sense. So that was my choice, out. Right? Really kind of think about what you want to pursue, because the last thing you want to do is like chase a role that you won't have a good time doing.
Thank you. That's good advice. So what is the difference between a Scrum Master and a project manager, but why are they always associated?
So I'll start with the second part of that question first. The reason they are always associated is for as long as agile frameworks and methodologies and practices have been around, or agile roles, let's put them under an umbrella term, organizations have wanted to try and retrofit the new roles into existing roles because that makes the change for them less challenging, right? So if we could just find the perfect formula for a project manager becomes a product owner and a delivery lead becomes a Scrum Master and, you know, et cetera, surely we'd all be doing the world's perfect, most perfect agile. The truth is, like, I just gave you the different association and to what you have just said. And that's because plenty of organizations have tried to do this mapping from Scrum Master becomes a project manager, for example. And so the association comes from the fact of, like, I guess, people being nervous about change and potentially having a misunderstanding about what that role, whether it's Scrum Master or product owner, might be. And saying, okay, in obviously we don't want to make you redundant and things like that. Your skills are still needed, but where will in this whole agile team business do you best fit in? So that's sort of that retrofitting attempt that a lot of people have been trying to do. That's why they always get associated. A lot of people assume that the Scrum Master is the agile project manager. Hence, that's because surely there someone has to do the project management side of things. I don't know if this person was here at the beginning. I think the first question we answered at today's webinar was about project management in Scrum. So I'm not going to repeat it again, but I think the way to think about it is the difference between a Scrum Master and a project manager is a Scrum Master's pure accountability is team effectiveness, right? They are removing impediments that impact the team from improving their ways of working. They are enabling them through education, through facilitation, through coaching, through mentorship, etc., to help them better at what they do, right? Now, can a project manager also do these things? Absolutely. So they can either put on the hat of a Scrum Master and do all these things, but project management also consists a lot of responsibilities and classically in organizations like, let's say, budgeting, recruitment, performance management for some reason. And in which case, I think, again, context specific, you might think about a project manager doing those things for a Scrum team and helping them get those things done. An organizational or a project manager's responsibility is being distributed amongst the members of the team. So the members of the team themselves do those things. And yes, it's entirely possible a Scrum Master ends up taking some of those responsibilities.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you. All right. So this question here. So what amount of technical experience or knowledge is needed to be an effective Scrum Master? Second to that, is it a red flag if there is a shift in expectations from the organization for a Scrum Master to have sufficient technical knowledge?
Yeah. It's not a red flag. So I'm going backwards with questions. It's not a red flag. But my answer to your first question is also zero. But let me clarify. Again, you guys are all figuring out my entire bio history, right? My first job was as a business analyst in an IT project in a financial services organization, right? And at that point in time, I had graduated with a degree in arts. And arts in Australia is the same as humanities in like the US, which means social sciences, right? So that means as part of my first job, I had no idea what I was doing, right? Forget technology. I had never done a day of finance or tech in my life. So what was I doing as a business analyst in an IT project? So there's a couple of things here, right? If I'm here these many years later, being able to talk to technology teams, being able to be a professional Scrum trainer, and Scrum predominantly being used by technology teams, but not technology teams only, is because of a couple of things. I think that having a non-technical background enables you to have curiosity, humility, and the willingness to learn, right? I knew the only way I was going to be good at anything I was doing was to learn, right? And how can that not be a good skill set for a Scrum Master? This willingness, openness to learn, curiosity, getting to know people, trying to understand what they do, right? Now, whether I liked it or not, of course, what's happened over time is I've picked up technical mumbo jumbo over the years. Now, many Scrum Masters actually, even if they come from non-technical backgrounds, go as far as learning some technology just so that they can understand the pains of people, right? So I've known people with my sort of similar history as myself who learn to do a little bit of programming, who do a little bit of the testing, technical testing and things like that, just so that they're better able to help the team. I never did. And I don't think that's ever impacted me as a Scrum Master, but that's also because I've never been like, well, I don't understand technology, so I'm just going to ignore the problems. Like it's really, that's the balance. So I suspect where organizations are looking for Scrum Masters with technical background is because they're worried, and that's completely natural. They're like, how can you enable my technical team members if you cannot speak the language? So I don't think it's a red flag. But I think it is on you if you're, let's say, applying for a role like that, or if you're in a role like that, to help the organization understand why it isn't detrimental that you don't have technical background.
That's great. Thank you. Hope that helps. So this next question, during sprint planning, the product owner and the developers are unable to reach an understanding about the highest order product backlog items, but they are agreed on a product goal. What should a Scrum Master do in this situation?
Okay. I'm wondering whether I'm misunderstanding the question. So when we say they're agreed on a product goal, I'll be honest, I'll say something really contentious. They don't have to agree. A product owner sets the product goal.
Right.
Right. What they do need to agree on at sprint planning is the sprint goal. So this is where I'm not sure if there's sort of like potentially a typo in like this, right? So it is, because the way I'm interpreting is that you're at sprint planning, you have alignment on whatever the product goal is, which is the future objective of the product. You have an alignment of what you want to work on this current sprint. Like there's, like, let's say 10 items up for grabs,
right?
But you're not aligned on which of those 10 are the most important, right? Assuming that is the case, the order of product backlog items are a product owner's call. As well. Order of product backlog items at a product owner's call, where the developers can negotiate this at a sprint planning, is to say which of these thing. Now, again, you're saying they don't agree. I'm wondering, are there dependencies? Are there risks? Is a product owner ignoring the advice of developers?
I did just hear from Nina. She did say it is a sprint goal.
Sprint goal, yeah.
That's what she meant.
Yeah, so again, like ultimately, as a Scrum Master, you just want to ensure that both product owners and developers are listening to each other and not trying to walk over each other, right? Developers are accountable for quality. Developers are accountable for solution. At sprint planning, developers get to say what capacity they have and how to do the work, right? Product owners can at best say these are the highest order items. To be honest, if their sprint goal is aligned, a product owner shouldn't really care what items get done. They should care that the sprint goal gets met.
Makes sense. Thank you. Yeah. I hope that helps, Nina. Oh, wait. Nina came back and said the developers are unable to determine how many product backlog items they could forecast in the upcoming sprint.
Yeah. Don't forecast the number of items. Forecast whether or not you can meet the goal, right? So it's like the example I always use is like set sprint goals. Like by the end of the sprint, users will be able to log into our application, right? Now, there are 10 different features you could build to allow users to log into an application, you know, two-factor authorization, email and password, PIN, biometrics, fingerprint, retinal, right? As a product owner or as a Scrum team, your goal is to deliver a valuable and usable increment that meets a goal, allow users to log into the application. Whether or not you deliver 5 items or 10 new items should be besides the point. So look at some past history to think about how many items you should be pulling in have some data. And if you don't have any data to go by, I always say proceed with caution, like always underestimate how many items you can do, but commit to the goal. Don't commit to the number of items.
That makes sense. Thank you. You're welcome, Nina. She said thank you. All right. So how do you convince people to change? As we all know, most people are resistant to change, and it can be tough to push them towards something new, especially if they've been working or got used to a process being a certain way for many, many years.
Yeah, I don't even want to answer this question, because if you figure it out, you can tell me. People are resistant to change. Look, the one thing I figured out is that how you phrase change to people is important. People have to be given a why. People have to be given a purpose. People have to be made to feel safe. People have to be made to feel like they will receive some benefit from this. A lot of people are told to change as opposed to asked to consider, is this a valuable opportunity or is this beneficial? How does this feel for you? How might this look for you? And I always say, I think the industry experts on this generally have said, and that's sort of what I try to do, is try not to go down the convincing and selling path, but, you know, actions speak louder than words. Work with your early adopters, work with your influencers, work with members of the organization who are willing to have a great team, have great vibes, get good stuff done every sprint or less, you know, and use that to create some momentum. There will always, always be some people who don't jump onto the train. That's okay. That's human beings. But by and large, we are creatures of evolution. We're actually very good at change. We just have to see the benefit of it. So show them the benefits, show them the data, show them good vibes. And yeah, that's sort of the idea.
Great. Thank you. So let's get to some event questions here. So what is your advice to prevent a daily scrum from becoming a status meeting?
Add a daily scrum. So I'll tell you this. I figured this out the hard way, right? So I'm fairly confident half, if not more than half of us, are doing the daily stand-ups that are going, these are all the meetings I went to yesterday, these are all the meetings I'm having today, these are how many coffees I drank yesterday, and people are rolling their eyes, and that's the kind of fun stuff. If a worst case scenario, you're probably providing that status update to either a scrum master or a product owner or some stakeholders, which is wonderful, right? In trying to change those status meetings, in my experience, I've done the whole, you know, maybe let's just let the developers plan their day, you know, let's just, you know, and things like that. And generally speaking, what people respond to with that is, well, then where will I get my update, right? And I've tried the whole, oh, why don't you just reach out to them on Slack, or just, you know, send out a note, or even the whole, why do you need that piece of information? Just let them do their thing, right? All of these things have backfired. The only thing that has worked is that I explain to developers or the scrum team as well, so the product owner, what the purpose of a daily scrum is. Plan your day by checking your progress around your goal, right? These things are short, sharp, almost logistical conversations about, you know, hey, I had this problem yesterday. Does someone know what I can do? And someone else says, oh, that happened to me too. I fixed it. Let me come help you. Someone else goes, hey, I'm leaving at 3 p.m. today because I got to pick up my kids from school. So someone pick this up. Yeah, sure. Great. You know, that's the purpose of a daily scrum. Are we on track for our goal? It's 15 minutes. It's not a, you know, it's valuable for the developers and all the developers only. And by adding a daily scrum, I find 15 minutes in the day and I give that to developers. And I say, but your purpose in these 15 minutes is to plan your day based on yesterday. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell what you're doing. Don't tell anyone else what you're doing. And you're going to have it, right? Because you're going to work today. So just have your daily scrum. They see the value of it and they go to those. There's engagement in those. Right. What happens to the status update is that 9 times out of 10, most of the scrum team stop going to that. And yeah, generally, it's unfortunately maybe me as a scrum master or a product owner or someone else or a representative developer who goes provides that status update. And that's a status update meeting. And then at some point, stakeholders stop coming to that too, because it's not as fun when you can't micromanage people. So then that one disappears from your calendar too.
Great. Thank you. So this next question here. So how do you encourage quiet voices speak up in a sprint retrospective.
This is so good. This is really like facilitation, not 101. This is like facilitation 301. So there's a couple of things here, right? I think to some extent, changing up how you're facilitating retrospectives is super important, right? In my experience, many retrospectives are, including ones I run, unfortunately, are like week after week after week. It's like, what went well? What didn't go well? What could we improve? And we're just sort of going through the motions. People are coming pre-prepared, and quiet people are like, what's the value of this, right? Changing up your prompts are super powerful, right? Hey, how am I doing as a Scrum team member? Like, let's talk about how we're doing in Scrum. Or, what did we learn this sprint? What did he lack with this sprint, right? What made you mad? What made you sad? What made you glad? And if you can't tell from those of us who are familiar with the re various retrospective techniques, highly recommend Googling various techniques and just try a different one every sprint. Those are ways to get multiple people to contribute, right? The other facilitation, so one side is like using different techniques. The other thing I would say is look up something called liberating structures, because liberating structures are hands down super powerful in enabling pretty much every voice in the room to be heard, depending on conversation. And the liberators actually designed the Professional Scrum Master 2 course. So it's really about making sure people's opinions and voices are heard. So those are the techniques I would give you. On top of that, I would also suggest that have a little bit of a think about what are your retrospectives like currently? Are they all parties? Are they all vent sessions? Are they all ones where you don't actually really take any action? So perhaps maybe there's no value. People don't understand the value of it. So a little bit of a sanity check on your quality of your retrospective. So people know that the only way they can get benefit from it is if they contribute.
Right.
And lastly, if you have quiet members and you are a Scrum Master, this is absolutely 100% a coaching, mentoring, personal one-on-one conversation situation. Make sure you're talking to those people to understand why it is that they're not contributing. Not from a, oh, actually, this is what I say. Never ask someone why they are doing or doing something. Why puts people on defense, right? Ask them
Right.
what or how questions. Don't ever ask why questions. Facilitation, coaching 101, right? Ask this person, what could I do differently to help you contribute? What are you missing? What do you need? Or how might we do things differently? Not why don't you talk in sprints, retros, or whatever, right? So that's sort of, I don't know, there's a bunch of stuff at your end. Quiet people.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'm also going to drop a link to Tasty Cupcakes. That's another site that has some
Thank
great
you.
retrospective
I was
ideas on there
gonna.
as well. Several professional Scrum trainers contribute to this also and run it. So please check that out too.
Yeah, for sure.
So, next question. It's six Scrum teams work on one product. Can they have their own product owner and own Scrum Master? So I think that would
Question.
mean six product owners
Yes, that would mean
and
it. This one
one
is an easy
product.
one. This one is an easy one. Single product owner, right? That's to allow the product owner to act as a single source of decision making for what to be worked on next by all the Scrum teams working on the product. They align to the same product goal. They all work off the same product backlog. As far as the Scrum Master goes, there's no boundaries there. Yes, they can have their own Scrum Master, which is to say, each Scrum team group, or someone in each Scrum team group may have a person wearing the Scrum Master hat. Potentially that's shared, potentially that's not. That's really up to how you can decide. But yeah, absolutely, they can have their own Scrum Master, but a product owner, single product backlog, single product goal. Also, same baseline definition of done. And for across all teams and all Scrum teams, ensuring they're integrating their increments by the end of every sprint. There's some bonus content for you.
Great, thank you. So here's an interesting question. So can the Scrum Master and the product owner be the same person?
Yeah, you can. I wouldn't advise. I wouldn't advise it. It's like having more than multiple heads. Like it's multiple heads. But yes, there's no boundary against doing both. Their accountabilities, they're like hats, right? So while similar to the just backing off my previous question, while there's a constraint around a single product being owned by a single product owner, there's no constraint about whether a product owner can't also be a developer or can't also be a Scrum Master. So yes, they can. The reason I wouldn't advise it is because product owners and Scrum Masters, number one, operate at a healthy tension. The healthy tension being a product owner is generally working about thinking about maximizing product value from the team's work, whereas a Scrum Master is more focused on maximizing team effectiveness, which can often work at tensions, a good thing, you know? So for example, you might at a sprint planning want that thing of like, hey, we want to make sure quality is met. We want to make sure we're meeting definition of done, not like building 10 things just because we have capacity, that kind of stuff. The other big challenge for me of being the same is that a Scrum Master is supposed to enable a product owner. Well, if you're the one and the same person, there's no one helping you out with your job. So it's really hard to that. I am a co-founder of a two-person business. So that means we don't have the option but to share the product owner accountability. Sorry, not share the product owner ability. Have both the product owner and a Scrum Master consider this thing going on. But I think if you ask my co-founder, they would say that they tend to squarely sit in the product owner space and I tend to sit in the Scrum Master space, just because otherwise otherwise basically their backlog would be a mess without me. Yeah.
That makes sense. Thank you. So what metrics or KPIs do you track to show you are being effective as a Scrum Master?
Scrum Master effectiveness, symptom number one, reliably, sustainably delivering valuable and quality increments. That means you need measures around quality. That means you need measures around value. If you're, right. And you need measures around, I think cadence is the word, but like, I think sustainability, I'm not sure exactly how to mention it, but the idea is that this could be subjective. Your sprints should feel like you could be doing this indefinitely. So if you're ending your sprints feeling like you've run a marathon, you're doing it wrong, right? So Scrum Masters help a team build a cadence that they could do indefinitely. Value and quality measures equal reliable delivery of value and quality. Great. The other one is team morale and or sense of continuous improvement. So I would also potentially measure things like how often are we innovating? How often are we running experiments? I would measure things like team culture, like employee satisfaction and or morale. There's 3 million different metrics in these worlds. Highly recommend if you're trying to think about measures, actual measures, or what metrics to use or what kinds of measures to use, read up evidence-based management from scrum.org. Changed my life in terms of how to actually put numbers next to things that I could only kind of, I don't know, imagine in my head previously. So that's a great opportunity to think about what measures. But yeah, quality, value, sustainability, team culture and morale, continuous improvement. That's what you're measuring.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So this question, let's see here. A new product owner comes into the Scrum team, which has been working on a product for 9 sprints already. She doesn't know about responsibilities, but understands that she is accountable for the product backlog. What does she do in this situation?
Yeah. So this is probably, you know, when I was mentioning, like I went and got a product owner role because I didn't want to learn about product ownership, right? That's sort of me. Spend time with the team. It's very similar to like pretend you know nothing. So spend time with the team to understand what the product is. They've been there and help from the team perspective understand the product, the solution, right? Help them understand that, be open about the fact that you are new and that they can, this is a good thing, you can use this to your advantage, because you'd be like, the only way for us to build a quality solution is if you can tell me what a quality solution is, right? Because you've been doing this for a while. You're accountable as developers for the quality of the solution and the solution. Tell me, teach me, let me know. On the other hand, on the flip side, and really, really important, Get to know your business, get to know your customers. When I say get to know your business, figure out how your business is structured. Where does your product line up? What are other product owners in the organization doing? Are there any frameworks, definitions of done, leadership, strategy things you need to be aware of, you need to lean into? So get to know your business, right? Get to know your organization. And of course, and probably I should have started with this, get to know your customers. Like if you're working on a CRM platform, go spend time with the sales team or the marketing team that's actually using them, figure out how they use this. Go spend time with the users, figure out how they use it. Spend a day on the phone, spend a day using your own website, spend a day, days talking to customers about their opinion, get to understand them. So this stuff can take a little bit of time, but you want to be the expert in your product. And it doesn't matter that you're new to it, but give yourself the time to get to know the product, get to know the business, get to know the solution. And then, you know, and then you're welcome to own the product backlog, set the product goal, change things up.
That's great. Thank you. So we have time for maybe one or two more questions here. So how do you go about, what is your advice for engaging stakeholders in a sprint review, getting them engaged?
Step one, once you've created a sprint goal at sprint planning, particularly for product owners, just tell your stakeholders that this is what we've committed to doing this sprint, along so you can give us feedback, right? So that's step number one. I think it's also important for you to curate the audience. A lot of stakeholders I know, particularly internal business stakeholders, they sort of get tired of getting invited to stuff that they have nothing to provide feedback on. It's not something they care about. So depending on your sprint goal and what you're planning to deliver any given sprint in terms of in your increment, make sure you've curated your stakeholder or invitation list, right? Be mindful that stakeholders aren't just business stakeholders, your customers, users, dependent teams, partner teams, other teams in the organization, your sales team, your marketing team, your legal team. These are all stakeholders. So make sure they're coming on board because they're the only people who will potentially help your increment see the light of day, right? The other side of it is that most people forget that a sprint review is a two-part session. Part one, feedback, certainly. But part two is update your product backlog based on what you've just seen to decide what to work on next and update your agenda and tell your stakeholders this. Hey, come along to our sprint so that, yes, you can give us feedback on what we've done, but also you can actually advise on what we might work on next sprint. And what stakeholder, internal business stakeholder, doesn't like the opportunity to tell us what we might work on? So create buy-in, make sure they understand that it's a working session. You want to talk to them. You're not going to just, you know, have a PowerPoint running for them where you just tell them right. What you did. Yeah. So curate your stakeholders accordingly and update your agenda.
That's great. Thank you. All right. So I think we're about ready to wrap up. Is there anything you want to leave our audience with today, Sans? Anything, any piece of advice or story you want to share, anything like that?
Piece of advice. If you, I think I want to say this because I think being a Scrum trainer, I often start the whole, you know, do all the Scrum, these are all the values of Scrum. If you take nothing else from Scrum, is the fact that the only reason Scrum is so valuable is because it is leveraging your innate ability as human beings to solve problems and make evidence-based decisions. If you're doing that, you're doing Scrum. The other thing is, if you're going to pick somewhere to start with Scrum, start with a retrospective, because the retrospective is an opportunity for your team to identify how to improve your processes and people and interactions. Channel your retrospective to figure out what works for you and go from there. That's sort of the idea. Don't try to do Scrum. Just try to improve your current circumstances.
That's awesome. Thank you. All right. So we are going to get ready to close out here. I'm just going to share my screen again quickly. All right. So we have a lot of free resources on the scrum.org website, like this webinar. So please feel free to check them out. We also have learning paths on our website with lots of great resources in there. So please utilize those and stay connected with us through our social media channels as well. Thank you all for attending today. And thank you for those who are listening to the recorded podcast. And we hope to see you all again soon. All right. So take care, everybody, and Scrum on. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. And thanks, Lindsay.